Welcome to Big Blend Radio, where we celebrate variety and how it adds spice to quality of life.
Welcome to the Big Daily Blend, everybody. You know, February is Black History Month, and if we're going to talk about Black history, we got to talk about the blues, and that's what we're talking about today. We're going to Mississippi. We have three special guests joining us, and the first one I want to introduce is Margot Cooper. Her new book is out now, and it is called Deep Inside the Blues, Photographs and Interviews, and that is going to be the main focus of our discussion today. It is a book that, if you love the blues, this is a treasure. This is something that you don't want to rush it. You want to read every word slowly, maybe have a little cognac on the side. This is one of the most precious books I've ever held my eyes on, honestly. It is that beautiful. And we do a lot of author and musician interviews on this show, but this is one of those truly special books that everyone should have. And I encourage you to go to Margot's website. It's margotcooper.com. It is out through the University Press of Mississippi with the foreword by William R. Ferris. And that's margotcooper.com. And that's Margot, M-A-R-G-O. And all the links that I talk about on the show today will be in the show notes, whether you're listening on YouTube, Facebook, or wherever, Spotify, Apple, all that good stuff. But welcome, Margot. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Lisa. And thanks for inviting me to participate in your show today.
Are you kidding me? This book is insane. This is like the Bible of the blues of Mississippi. I can't stand it. Like, I can't stop. Like, I need like a month off or something, because this is like a lot of pages, but the photos are incredible. The fact that it's black and white. What's it like? Because we're all getting it through PDF and digital form. Is it out, like, is it paperback or a hardcover? Because I want the big book.
it's out in hardcover, and the editor of University Press of Mississippi, Craig Gill said, yes, you you're going to have a beautiful book, and they truly delivered. And I worked very hard a number of years. John Suter, who lives in Chicago, we were at school at Art Institute of Boston, New England School of Photography together like 20 years ago. And he's been working on my documentary projects alongside of me. And I wanted to make this the book in both in terms of the photographs and the text as good as it could be. This is my way to honor the people and musicians that I've been lucky enough to spend time with, in some cases, decades. And as I say in the book, I believe that remembering is a duty. It's a sacred duty. And I took that responsibility seriously. And I have been proud to be a contributing writer and photographer for Living Blues. And I wanted to make sure that more people around the world knew about Mississippi and the blues and the musicians who talk in their own words about growing up and living in Mississippi, or in a few cases, Willie Big Eye Smith, Calvin Fuzz Jones, and Luther Guitar Jr. Johnson, who went on to spend considerable time in Chicago and played with Muddy Waters. It's my honor.
Well, you also crossed over to Arkansas too, which I appreciate as well. And, and also photographed a lot of the musicians that were touring in your upstate. You're up in the northeast part of the country. You also photographed them there, which I think is amazing, because everyone we're talking to on the show today is from up there in New York, New Hampshire, Maine, all of that area. But I also want to tell people that a lot of the photos in this book are also have appeared and been featured in the New York Times Lens blog. And that's pretty, I mean, that's epic. And, I think everyone that's on the show, I'm going to bring Johnny and Lisa on in a second, but all of us are just like, your integrity to the musicians and the integrity also that you have for being a documentarian is incredible. We really appreciate it. I do, for sure. Just that you're allowing, these musicians to also have their own words and be who they are, it's something very special. And it's a treasure. Your book is a treasure for sure.
Well, thank you.
Needs to be in like schools. Like, honestly, I want this to be part of Black history. And I want to tell everyone too, which I didn't tell anyone, because like, honestly, I just decided we need to do this. I'm going to create a blues playlist of music to go with your book. I don't know if you have one, but I'm doing one on YouTube and Spotify. So that will also be linked in the show notes. And all three of you on the show today, if you want me to make sure it'll be all musicians that are featured in the book. Also, I'm going to have to put one of Johnny Mastro's in there, you know, because, you know, never trust the living, right, Johnny? Johnny's here. We've missed Johnny. Johnny's been on our show for years. In fact, he's been on how many covers of our magazines, even back in the day of when we were in print. We first met Johnny Mastro and the Mama's Boys out in Long Beach. Well, actually, it was Venice Beach, right?
Venice Beach, yeah. Beach.
Yeah, Venice Beach, yeah. And we were all behaving. Nancy and I were behaving. And stumbled on this amazing music and went in there and fell in love with Johnny Mastro and the Mama's Boys music. And Johnny and the band and his wife Lisa Sierra are just amazing people. And I encourage you to go to the website johnnymastro.com. Johnny Mastro and the Mama's Boys perform out of New Orleans and will be on tour soon. And I believe a new album is in the works, right, Johnny?
Yeah, you got it. We're doing a collaboration this time, so. Yeah, a friend of ours, that Ian Siegel from the UK, and he came over to New Orleans, and we did a week, and hopefully I'll finish mixing it next week.
Sweet, sweet. And you've been doing some radio work, too, over the years, too. I get to tune in once in a while and hear you DJ. It's cool.
Yeah, I DJ at WWOZ in New Orleans, 90.7 FM. I do a blues show, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It still blows my mind that I can get on the air in the middle of the day and play the blue, the music that I love. And a lot of these people that are in Margot's book, actually.
Yeah, exactly. So you're going to give me some like pointers on this playlist, right?
Well, it's going to be hard, I tell you, because she's got some of these guys are a bit obscure in a way, you know, great musicians, but so it's going to be, you know, you're going to have to search out some of them. I think, I don't know if Margot would agree with that.
Margot?
Yeah, I actually, a friend of mine who's a DJ up here, my friend Rick Roth, he was working on a playlist as well. But, you know, let me know if you have trouble with, you know, finding music for any of these musicians. But, I consider myself, like I said, very lucky to have met each and every one of the individuals photographed or interviewed in my book.
Oh, man, I think we're all a little jealous. I am. I mean, Pine Top Perkins, you kick off with that, too. And I'm like, dude, Pine Top Perkins has like been a hero of my life. Like, I just have always his piano playing and just the way he just slows us all down, that you're going to sit down and listen. You can't.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would, you know, the. You know, I unfortunately I was in law school and working as a public defender in the 80s when a lot of great blues musicians were coming through Boston and the New England area. But in the 90s, there were still, as you can see in the book, lots of great musicians, lots of venues, happy to have the musicians coming to the clubs. The first House of Blues started in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Harper's Ferry and Alston brought in musicians, particularly in February, from all over. And several of the photographs in the book, including photographs of like Bo Diddley, Robert Jr. Lockwood, were taken at Harper's Ferry. Johnny D's was a number wonderful venue where lots of the musicians came through. But so in the 90s, I started photographing 30 years ago, going into the clubs. As I said, I was a public defender. I never had time to do anything else when I was a public defender. But then I started my own practice focused on juvenile court cases, representing parents and kids.
Awesome.
Abuse and neglect cases, so on and so forth. But anyway, Muddy Waters tribute band would come through, came through on a number of occasions. And that's how I met like Willie and Calvin and Luther Guitar Jr. Johnson, Pine Top, And as we know, we were very lucky that Pinetop kept playing through into his 90s. And I did see him at King Biscuit, and in his last performances.
Amazing. It's amazing. Johnny, as a blues musician and a DJ and someone I know that I could, he's been on our shows of all kinds of craziness too. Our old school live shows, like crazy,
They were
right?
wild.
And they were wild and were, it's still got that element somewhere, But I don't care what I ask you. Like we have this, like our one friend Mike Guarda comes on in military history. I don't care what I ask him. He has this answer. Like he knows his history so much. And I think that you're one of those people of music. And I don't care if I'm asking you about Led Zeppelin or Fleetwood Mac or something. It's like Johnny knows his music. Going through Margot's book, what were your feelings as a, especially as a blues musician? Do you share that feeling I have about the integrity that she put into this?
Yeah, I mean, there's I've read a lot of books, and this one has a real honesty to it, I think. And that made me come up with some questions for Margot, if that's all right. But I was really blown away, Margot, with both the pictures and the interviews. The interviews are very different than usually there's this kind of cookie cutter questions for the musicians, and you start seeing the same story over and over. But with this one, each person had like somehow you got out of them. Like their own story. And especially with the racism thing, it seems like they weren't afraid to talk about that. And I was curious if you had to coax them along the way, or did this just happen naturally?
Well, so the way I worked on my stories for Living Blues, these because I live up north, I would go to Mississippi. I would spend time in Mississippi several times a year, but it really required often years to complete a story. I decided from the very beginning that I only wanted to write the stories from with the musician's words, which also takes more time because I wanted to make sure, I accurately recorded and wrote what they had to say. So relationships were built. Our work on the stories, as I said, would be over years. In some instances, I had met the musicians and was dialoguing with them before I started interviewing them. But we would, I have to look at each interview, but my notes, so I met with each person many times. I would come back, I would record, come home, transcribe, go back down, sit down, we'd go over what I had written, make corrections, additions, keep recording. So this would happen over a number of times. And I also was interested, so again, I wasn't interested. I didn't want to do it like, what's my take on somebody? I wanted them to tell me about their lives. And we would start with, who are your parents, your grandparents? Tell me about your childhood. Tell me about what was it like, whether it was the schooling, sharecropping, and through those stories, people would share about segregation, discrimination, and in addition to talking about who they were listening to on the radio and when they were children and through their adult years. So I think that was how trust was built. And so I said these were relationships that I cherished and treasured. And also I say in the book, the people I interviewed were my teachers. I didn't come from Mississippi. So, and I also say, like, as a public defender, you learn to listen, you learn to shape a story, you learn to advocate. And here I was like, I just thought I was the luckiest person in the world, whoever I was sitting down with and, visiting them at their home. I would stay over it with Sam Carr's and with Sam Carr and Doris. I stayed over with Elsie Ulmer and I would go when I stayed at Elsie Ulmer's house. So I was so lucky. I would go to sleep as he would play whatever he felt like playing, his guitar, his banjo. Whatever. We just share, you know, it's like we shared our lives together. I might drive with, you know, drive with people, looking over where they used to live, meeting old friends or other people that contributed to their story. And I always remained friends with, if a story was finished, I would keep going to their shows, keep visiting, and yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And because you obviously the listening part of it, but just also just relaxing into it and, you know, letting things unfold. It's special. I want to bring our next guest on here, Lisa Evans. She's a travel writer, photographer, big blues fan. Big blues fan, I know, because every time she's on Big Blend Radio with us, she's on our shows all the time. Normally talking about travel, but if she can dodge off to anything blues, she is. She focuses a lot on coastal Mississippi and wrote the book 100 Things to Do in Coastal Mississippi Before You Die. Her website is writerlisa.com and reedypress.com is where you can get her book. But Lisa, welcome back. How are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Oh, doing good. Doing good. Going through and hearing these stories, and this is your backyard that Margo, you know, this is the backyard and your people that you're surrounded by. You've got to have some appreciation for Margo's Deep Inside the Blues book.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, first of all, the photographs are stunning. I mean, you can look at a photograph and it's like you feel everything that they're just stunning. So, kudos to you on those. And you can really, like I said, a picture's worth a thousand words, and yours are absolutely stunning. I'm so glad that Lisa brought up about whether it's hardcover or something, because I want one for my home and for my coffee table. So I want one so everybody can look at it. But yes, I am, as Lisa said, I'm big into the blues. I actually I don't know, stumbled upon it is the right word. But again, I'm, you know, born and raised in central New York, and I've been on the coast now for I think it's 11 years. And you know, I have always enjoyed all kinds of, well, most 90% of all different genres of music. There's a couple that I'm not real into, but for the most part. And you know, my interest in blues just started, you know, once I got to coastal Mississippi and going around. Obviously, we have a 100-man hall down there, and that, you know, just seeps the blues. And that's how I actually got started into it. And then the Mississippi Blues Trail, which somebody approached me to write an article about the Mississippi Blues Trail. So, okay, naive me, think, okay, yeah, this is easy. Yet wrong. It's probably going to take me the rest of my life, just to, you know, because each marker has a story. And I was reading some of the people that you mentioned, and I have so much homework to do. I mean, I recognize a lot of the names, but there's a lot that I don't. And I'm like, okay, well, now I got to go research who they are. But the trust that these people feel for you and your work, and you know, the love that you have that you put into this book, is that, to me, is very evident. I don't think these people would have told you their stories as deeply and as intimately as they did, without that deep level of trust. I mean, trust is something that, especially sadly in Mississippi, you know, a lot of African Americans may not necessarily have. It just is, it's the climate, it's whatever. So you know, these people obviously had a great deal of trust in you, and I think it's just wonderful.
Oh, that's a good point that you bring up about maybe because you know, Margo, do you think that coming from out of state helped in that? And the fact that you did go to blues events in your area upstate, right? Or I should say up northeast, however you want to say it. Obviously, you've not spent that much time up there, but you know, do you think it helped in a way? Because I found from Nancy and I traveling like pretty much our whole lives nonstop, right? When you're the newcomer, people are curious in you're curious in them, and there's this, you can bridge gaps quicker sometimes being from a new place, and also maybe not being a permanent resident helps in a weird way. I don't know how to explain it, but it kind of helped me in my whole life. Like in school, I went to 16 schools, and yeah, Johnny, remember I got put into, you know, Catholic nun school thing, you know, after getting kicked out. But anyway, that didn't last very long. But my knuckles feel it today. I swear to God, man, whatever they did to my knuckles, like, you know, nuns, stop it. No, they nailed me. But there's something about being that you're not walking in with the baggage of the state.
I mean, I guess I can only speak to my experience. I mean, when I, you know, after listening to the music up north and meeting some of the musicians, talking to them, it was clear, you know, I didn't, it wasn't well thought out, but it was just like, I need to go to Mississippi. You know, what are the stories behind the music? And, you know, I just went, and I started going in 1997. You know, so it's been 26 years. I didn't, the only person I knew in Mississippi was Calvin Fuzz Jones. And, you know, when I flew in, I visited Calvin, and his mother happened to be there. So that was beautiful. But, you know, I just went, I've always traveled by myself. You know, I think I would share my feelings and enthusiasm with whoever are in interest, whoever I met from day one. It's like, and walking, you know, the first night I was there, I went to the small festival at West Point. You know, it's establishing, you know, it's how you communicate with people. And as I said, I'd had 6 years as a public defender, and I've been working as a lawyer. I've only basically done court appointed work. You learn, it's important to do the best job that you can, to be an effective communicator and listener. So anyway, I had spoken with Dr. Joe Stevens before I went down, and the next day he took me to Annie Eggerson's home. You know, Honey Boy was playing, and the editor from Living Blues, David Evans, drew me a map and said, you know, I asked, where should I go tomorrow? And it turned out to be the Othar Turner picnic. I didn't know anybody there, and it was his daughter, Bernice, you know, greeted me. There weren't a lot of people. And, you know, you just let people know how grateful you are to be there and show enthusiasm, dance, clean up, whatever's necessary. And I started going to Othar's every year. And, you know, Bernice's kids were young. I would visit when I was down in Mississippi, bring pizza. You know, we'd have pizza with the kids and her. And I would go to the picnic, and then, you know, I would stay and clean up if they needed help behind the booth. I would sell things. You know, you just become a part of people's lives.
Like
Sam and Doris, mm-hmm. you know, wanted me to stay over. You're just happy to happy. I mean, Jesus, people. It's been a very, very beautiful experience in every way.
What about the spirituality and the religious side of it? Because, you know, to me, when I listen to the blues, there's like, it just, you know, there's gospel blues, right? And gospel music. And at the same time, it just is like, I don't know. The blues to me is as close as you can get to God or whoever or whatever God is to anybody.
I agree with that. I mean, it's like true. It's like you're raw. It's just, it's life.
It can be sexual, it can be spiritual, it can be all of it. You can have both at the same time if you want. You know, it's, Johnny, I know you've written some of those, but isn't it, you know, with that in your book, you show that absolute, how do I say this? In when it comes to music, like when you see like an audience let go, and you had some pictures in there where you could see people just let go and be themselves and not care. And I think that's when to be able to capture that beyond the intimate conversations and portraiture that you did with the musicians, but for the audience to just not care and be that. And I think that's what juke joints were about, man. There was just like, it is get down, get, you know, you're going home in some way. And there, it just, you did that so well too, because it's a little bit of everything, but there's a spiritualism in there, and there's a freedom in some of the pictures that you did there, or just that made me feel at home in where how I was raised in Africa, and part of it was in the bush with dance, like true tribal stuff. Like I lived with two different tribes as a kid, and so that was part of our lives. Is, you know, like I always laugh, and you know, just even that I was raised to and taught to stick my butt out. I know this sounds really weird, but it's not. I was, you know, and to this day, my posture is a little off, but if, you know, for a white girl, and over there, it's like you stick it out and you get down. And I learned that from a very young age. And when I was going through your book, you brought me home to my childhood of that as a little white kid in the bush in Africa. And it was just like there's this freedom that sometimes I think we forget to have. And it's wild when you think about, you know, slavery and, you know, racism and everything that our, you know, our black people here in this country have gone through. But you show that.
I can again, you know, I photographed and wrote for what I experienced and what people shared with me, and in my experience, and you know, some of the, of course, I have a lot more photographs that are in the book, but you know, there was a joy in listening to, there was a joy from the musicians in playing the music, a joy in singing, a joy, you know, with the audience dancing. And you know, so with my photograph, I would, you know, I would say to myself, you know, I'm dancing with my camera, I'm dancing with the people. I would dance at times holding a camera in one hand and just dancing. And you know, you just get, you have to be close to people, and you know, if you're making contact, you're smiling. And again, I you know, these relationships were over years, because you know, some people knew me. And yeah, just get close, be part of it, so that you're one with what's going on.
We call it having the wiggy butt. You gotta have the wiggy butt, right, Johnny? Come on, you know that. You know what I mean about the wiggy butt, right? And then there's a
No, I
strut
don't.
dance. Oh, come on!
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I know. Come on, like
Out in the
listen.
bush. I don't know
Who
what you're talking about.
you?
I
Come
can
on, that
guess.
what? I know. No, listen, the wiggy butt. You know now there's always a squat dance at the end of the night. You know someone's doing the squat dance at the end of the night of a gig, right? You know it. It's coming.
I
But
guess.
squat dance and wiggy butt.
Oh
Listen,
boy.
it's about your tail feathers. You got to shake it. It's important. Everybody needs to. And if you don't shake your tail feathers, you know,
Well,
you're going to be dead. Go ahead.
one of
Save
the
me.
interviews. No, I was just going to say it was interesting, because I haven't heard this been, but I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was Willie Big Eyes, but they were talking when they Margo was interviewing. They said that the blues music was freedom. It was an expression of freedom, and I hadn't really thought about it like that too much. And the other thing that sticks through is the close relationship with the church, of course, you know. So it's interesting to hear these guys. Almost everybody, I didn't get through the whole book yet, but most of the interviews I read, they'll talk about the church, and that goes way back. You know, when guys would go, like, you know, a Son House or Charlie Patton, they would go back and forth between preaching and playing the blues, and it's very much alive with these stories that she got. So, but I had a question for Margo, if it's okay. Out of all these interviews and pictures, do one or two of them stand out more than the others?
I'm, you know, I loved everybody that's, you know,
Yeah, it's like children, probably. You can't you pick a favorite, maybe.
you know, I, you know, yeah, I mean, I, again, each person was special to me, and I try to really, you know, the pictures, I wanted the pictures to be strong for each person, and, you know, so that the reader who, you know, may not know, you know, these musicians could get a feel whether, you know, as you can see through the book, there might be a picture of somebody performing, but then there may be, you know, there's offstage pictures. Who were
Right.
they? So that you could, you know, have some sense. And in some of my pictures, like I was Luther Guitar Jr. Johnson was my friend. That's there's like a 20-year, period of
Right.
photographs. I tried to, I th that was important. With many of those, Fred, Robert Bilbo Walker, Eddie Cusick, so many of the musicians, yeah. So no, I each story, each person was special, and I'm grateful for every experience I had.
I was going to say, like Lisa Evans, I think you and I share this, and maybe not with Johnny, but the two of us are going, we found out a bunch of blues musicians we had no clue about. And it was
Oh,
that part of,
absolutely.
I mean, it's, that was part of it to me. I'm like, oh man, see, this is a rabbit hole book and you can't finish overnight, right? Everyone. So when you get it, it's like three, it's like a page a day book. And the fact is you pick up, read the beginning, get an understanding, and then there's different regions and everything, how the book is divided. But I mean, this is one of those things that you could just have a story a night kind of thing with this book. And I'm with Lisa. I want the hardcover too, but it's hard in a car, but other people can do it. I love it. But Lisa, you mentioned like there's musicians in there none of us know about probably. And I think sometimes with the blues, and Johnny, I'm sure you've run into this too, that it's, there's always B.B. King, right? And you got B.B. King, you got Buddy Guy, my dude, I love my Buddy Guy. Ooh. And I,
Yes.
when in the beginning of the book, you had Buddy Guy in there, I'm like, dude, I was just talking about him for Polka Dot Day. Well, listen, he did that for his mom. He wanted a Cadillac that had polka dots and drive it up for his mom, right? This history of Buddy Guy to me is just honest to God, like I know Muddy Waters is big for you, Johnny, but Buddy Guy is my dude. Seriously.
There's
He
nothing wrong with
is.
Buddy Guy.
Yeah. Buddy
And
Guy's got.
didn't he just celebrate a birthday like well into his 80s or something? I mean, he's still playing and he still sounds just as good. I mean, it's awesome. But
He is
yeah,
badass.
there is definitely a lot of people that I'm gonna have to, now that it's like, especially the ones in Mississippi. Obviously that holds a little bit, closer to my heart now that I've kind of delved into this, but definitely some that I'm gonna have to, look up and look into further, when I head up into the Delta and up into Clarksdale and my next time around. So
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. And by the way, Louisiana just did a new plaque for like a historic sign marker for Buddy Guy because he's from there. Everyone's important, and everybody needs to listen to Sweet Tea for the rest of the day. But anyway,
sweet tea.
sorry.
Talking about
Listen,
me,
that's a good album.
I was lucky to see Bobby Rush two nights recently. So we're talking about, so you want to celebrate a blues musician who's, or as Bobby says, an entertainer who's still performing today. Bobby's on the road as we speak. I know he's got a couple of gigs at the Lincoln Center in New York with Shamika Copeland, but I saw him at Jimmy's in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and then the next night at Bull Run in Shirley, Massachusetts. And he was fabulous. He was on his feet, singing, dancing, talking, playing the harmonica for a straight hour and a half.
Wow. Yeah.
Mixed
You
with white
mentioned
Christmas.
Shamika Cope.
Go ahead.
You mentioned Shamika Copeland. I love her show on Sirius. She's got her when she d you know she has a she's a DJ on Sirius, and she actually was at Ground Zero in Biloxi. Oh, I don't know, several months ago, and that was a great show.
I saw her in Colorado, in Greeley, Colorado, up in cattle country at a blues, they have this blues festival that is insane with a Larkin Poe. There was a Watermelon Slim, I think was there. Mr. Sip, Mr. Oh, Mr.
Mr.
Sip,
Sip.
Sip, Mr. Sip was there. It was incredible show. And it was amazing because you could see one stage, and when the performers were done, you just turn your chair around, which, who was sitting anyway? It's so stupid to sit. But then you see the next band. It was crazy, but she was the headliner for the show, And your photo of her was like this. She was still like a little bit of that innocent look, but not.
You know she was what I young. Mean?
Still young. That
young
was
girl.
In the 90s. Her father was sick. Her father was supposed to play that night at the House of Blues, and he wasn't feeling well. And that's Shamika took to the stage.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
I was lucky enough to see Johnny Copeland, you know, in New England a couple of times. So
wow.
She was with him at that stage of life.
Johnny,
nice.
I know you got more up your sleeve here. I don't want to cross over on that
because
I know you got questions.
Well, don't feel bad about the names. Like there's several. I'm looking through them now, and I'm can't wait to read it because I don't know who they are. And
and
Margo
really?
Does. There's a lot of obscure.
Dude.
Yeah, it's deep,
Mickey,
man.
Mickey
This is
Rogers is still alive today. You know, he lives down in the Greenville area, and sometimes he told me he's still Club Ebony, as you may have read in the New York Times or elsewhere.
Right.
Is back, and he sometimes plays there. I mean, there's still some great older musicians who are around. Last
Is Willie
year,
King still around?
who?
Willie King?
No, he died.
He
He
passed,
died too many years ago, sadly. But Cadillac John Nolden, who I write about, is 96, and he played at Juke Joint last year with Bill Abel. I mean, it was beautiful. He plays the harp and sings, and he's,
all right.
You know, to circle back to the earlier one of our points of the conversation, I mean, he grew up in the church too, you know, sang in the church, and he sang with his brothers. So he had a gospel group, and then with the brothers, and when they would go to the radio station, it's in the story, Deep Inside the Blues, his story, they would see B.B. King also down there. And then with one of his brothers, he and his brother would play in the streets of Sunflower, and there were times when they would see B.B. King there also doing the same thing. Yeah, Cadillac played a few gigs last year. You can find, you know, there are fortunately a few people, older people, carrying on. And what's also cool is some of the, like Shamika, second and third generations carrying on the music. So,
right.
Willie, you know, Willie Big Eye Smith died, but Kenny Smith, you know, is a well-known drummer, and he performs every year at King Biscuit in Helena. You've got Cedric Burnside, grandson of R.L. Burnside, and Dwayne Burnside and Gary Burnside, R.L.'s sons, you know, who are, you know, you can find playing around Mississippi. I mean, of course, Cedric is playing around the world and across the country. Sade Thomas, Other's granddaughter. Sade has been recording. She's also, she last year played in Africa, played in Europe, carrying on that fife and drum tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So it's beautiful to witness, again, some of these, Trent Ayers, son of Joe Ayers, and Joe's alive, and Trent recently recorded, he and his dad playing. So it's really lovely to witness, you know, the generations who are carrying on. And you can also find people like Anthony Sherrod in Clarksdale, who, you know, grew up at you know, learned at the Delta Blues Museum and played with a number of the musicians who passed, but learned from them. So,
I love that the torch is being carried on. It's kind of like B.B. King's daughter. We had her, one of them on, and I think it was Shirley we had on, and, you know, like Sam Cooke's daughter. I know he's not blues, but like certain ones, Sakia Hooker's on our show all the time. And it's like to hear them do something, but it's always got to have, it's cool because they bring in their own style too, you know?
Right.
And it's important to recognize that, you know, everyone is different, and to let them have that space, you know, like, you know, Lucas Nelson from Willie Nelson, like his he's not his dad yet. He's got a kind of that voice, you know, and but they're their own people. And I think us as listeners have to look at the kids coming in and let them go, yeah, thank you for carrying the torch of, you know, your family, but let them be themselves. What do you think as an artist, Johnny, on that? Because they've got to be able to be them, their own musicians.
Well, yeah, I mean, it, you know, it starts out with what you feel about what you're doing with music. And for me, it's always been about just taking this music that I love, but not trying to do it like they do it. You know, so I think it's important. And to me, all the great blues artists, they all have their own individual style. Like, I'm just looking at this picture of T-Model Ford right now with this kid. This picture is unbelievable. And T-Model just had this certain style that he sounds like himself. Same with Sydell Davis. You know, he had his own thing. So for me, that's the real art in music, is taking your personality and your own story and putting it out there in 12 bars or whatever it is. So I feel the same way. The other guy I was thinking about when you were talking was Hank Williams, number three.
Yeah,
his grandson kind of sounds like Hank Williams just a little bit. His music's totally different.
Mud. Yeah, Mississippi Mud. Come on,
there you go. You got Muddy Waters.
And he trashed everybody in the music industry that was screwing things up in Nashville and Texas. Like, he just was like, he's screwing it up. No, but it's true. Like, sorry. It's
yeah,
true.
No. I agree with you. So I think that's important to bring your own thing to it. And that's what all the great blues artists, they seem to have their own style.
Well, I just kept it Mississippi Mud. You got to bring it in there. The other thing, too, you also go into some of the history. You've got that famous bridge there in your book, and get into the history of Emmett Till. And I want to say thank you to our National Park Service, has now actually recognized that history. And we have a National Park Historic Site through the National Park Service now to recognize the history of Emmett. And you went a little bit further into the roots so people would understand with that. Margo, do you want to tell us a little bit about photographing that bridge? Because the bridge, even the way you've done it, where it's got a cold vibe to it.
Well, I, you know, there's now, you'll have to, Lisa, because I can't off the top of my head, but there's a center, they have plaques up. I know that I've seen pictures where one of them had bullet holes in it, and maybe that was at Bryant's, a marker at Bryant's. But there are, in that area,
Yes. No, here it is. There's an Emmett Till and Mamie Till Mobley. This is in, there's two sites. Two sites under the National Park Service. There's a national monument in Illinois and in Mississippi. So he had traveled to Money, Mississippi to visit relatives, and that's when he was kidnapped, tortured, and murdered. And I'm reading this right off NPS site. If everybody goes to nps.gov/TILL, you'll be able to see it. But these are, I mean, this is pretty recent. In fact, we were part of shows to help make this happen because it's so important.
In my book, Lisa, Willie Big Eye Smith talks about walking by Emmett Till's coffin, and, you know, the open face coffin in Chicago, and the impact that that had on him and other people in Chicago. Mickey Rogers knew Emmett Till because they were both with family in Chicago, and they both went down to Mississippi to visit family, you know, that remained in Mississippi. And Mickey talks about when, you know, after Emmett's killing and death, his family sent him right back to Chicago.
Yeah. Well, several of
that's I remember several. Stain.
Go ahead, Lisa.
That's definitely a stain on Mississippi, as far as, you know, and to this day, it was just recently that it was still in the news, you know, when, you know, mm-hmm. it, it it's just awful.
Like
There's no
Nina
other
Simone
word for
says,
it.
Mississippi, goddamn, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I still then don't that's a whole other rabbit hole. Go ahead, Johnny.
Yeah,
sorry.
You're right there. You're absolutely correct there.
So I was going to say that I think I remember reading several of them. Maybe it was Billy Boy Honor. Somebody else also mentioned him. And I'm trying to think. It was two or three people said that they had in Chicago that they made a point of going to the funeral or to the, you know, the wake, and how much of an effect it had on them and the anger that it brought up.
Yeah, that was Willie Big Eyes Smith.
Willie Big Eyes. Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's the thing about what's so interesting about the blues, there's like a spirituality, there's the sex part, there's the freedom part, right? And then there is blues that has that little bit of like, you know, like there is the Mississippi goddamn, you know, Nina Simone kind of thing, where I think it has every emotion in the blues, you know. Do you feel that, Margot, as you know, did you listen as you put this book together? Did you listen to music? Did you listen to everybody? Like as you were putting this
I wish I could have spent more time listening to music once I was home. But, you know, when I'm in Mississippi, I try to, you know, catch as much music as I can. And, you know, sometimes people would play when I visited. But there's another aspect too of the music, which a number of musicians talk about. You know, how singing in the fields was a way to take their mind off the work, the drudgery of going up and down the row, whether you were plowing or picking cotton, and you know that you would they themselves might sing, or you hear other people sing, and that could be, you know, Joe Ayers talks about, you know, women, you know, a group of women might be singing, and how it helped just get through the day, in addition to, you know, the other things that were talking about. But that was another aspect of the music that was very important and key to just living.
It is. And I think it goes with a heartbeat too, man. Music goes with a heartbeat. And so it's like you keep moving forward with music, you know. Music does. It just has that, no matter what. I don't, you know, it's like you could be having the worst day in your life. Put some music on and you'll go, okay, I can keep going. I can keep going. Mm-hmm. It's like this extra heartbeat. I don't know how to explain it other than that. It's like you're, it's like, it is. Music is a savior, man. It is. It is everything.
I think that's where people talk about the healing power of music. Whatever, you know, for each person that may be. And I'm sure you've all seen it where, and I have, some of the older musicians that I knew, how important it was and is to them to continue to get on stage and play, and that, you know, provide such joy in when they're in failing health or whatever. So throughout the life, the music brings, as I said, solace, joy, happiness, or helps you with get through the blues that you may be experiencing in the hard times.
Losing, oh, and the breakups. Let's talk about the breakups. It's February. It's Valentine's Day month. Let's talk about breakups. Like, I lost my woman. I lost my man. You know. So, in closing here, I know, Johnny, do you have, you had more questions? I know we're going over time here. I know.
Yeah.
Lisa, you good? Lisa, tell me if you have to go.
I'm good. I've just totally enjoyed listening to this, and like I said, now I have to find time to do more homework.
I know, I love this, because she's gonna do, I know we're gonna have to have her back on, and we're gonna have to do follow-ups on this. I don't know, Lisa, I think we're gonna have to pick you up when we go through Louisiana and get into Mississippi. We're gonna have to take Margot's book, and then I'm gonna, yeah, you know. But this is the thing. Oh, wait, Johnny, can I step in quickly, because we talk about the travel part. What about the juke joints? Are we losing them? Because we were
There's
in
not too many
Natchez,
left.
Louisiana. They're going. And our friend Arlene, she saw oh, why is his name escaping me? Blueberry Hill. I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill.
Oh, yes.
Come on, y'all
Yeah,
know him.
exactly.
He
Fats
played there.
Domino. You mean
Fats
Fats
Domino.
Fats Domino, thank you. And he used to play in these juke joints and all through Natchitoches and down. I mean, I know you, Johnny, I know New Orleans. It's big and got all that music. And Baton Rouge and Louisiana's got its huge culture too, on this. But like these juke joints, I think it's important that you have some of those in the book and feature them because they are literally falling down to shreds. Like there's nothing left. And so I want people to understand, go see them and just stand there to know what happened. And you can hear the music, play it in your car, play it on your phone, do whatever you can, but like recreate it, like go there. It's just, I don't know how you can't play this music when you drive through Mississippi and stuff and Mississippi and Louisiana and Alabama and the South. Thank God you guys actually have real radio stations that actually play this stuff. Like I appreciate it as travelers, but Margo, the juke joints, tell me about that because you went to some, right? And through this, and this is important that I feel like we should be saving them like national park units. Like really.
Well, that's what I mean. It's tragic. I mean, I go back to Poor Monkeys, which, has been photographed by many photographers. I've seen it, pictures in the New York Times, and it's falling down, and nothing is at the moment. There's a blues trail marker, but nothing's being done to preserve it. But also, as I've gone back to the places where some of these musicians grew up, all that history has been erased, torn down, where people lived, the churches. I mean, there's still, you can find some old churches, but many have been, are just gone. So there's no marker for what happened, where, no, what did it look like? I just went back with Mickey Rogers when I was down in October to a couple of places that are in the book, and Cotton House, and the house, the replica of, where he had lived. Those were all gone.
Damn it. I
It is.
went
That's
through
a
some of
sad
that with
thing.
in Natchitoches, Louisiana. That's kind of got me spurred up. Like, I like we document graveyards. I know that sounds weird, but I love graveyards. But I would rather we also look at some of these places like Natchitoches, Louisiana. There's some of the juke joints, and over the years, we've been there for over 10 years now visiting that area. It's the oldest city in Louisiana. And like they're literally like dying, like they're decimating, like they're just falling down and going down. And then you get to the Elvin, Mr. Elvin Shields took us around, and he comes from a sharecropper family, and he saved his sharecropper family house, which is now part of the National Park Service. And if it wasn't for him standing up, that would have been overlooked. And he took us around to where he went to school, went to his church, and I have all these photos, like. And I don't know, I'm just documenting. I don't know what to do with it all, but like he's like the this it's no one's in these schools, this school or this church, And anyway, it's kind of crazy when you go like what you've done, Margo. And I want to say Lisa, I think Lisa, both of us as travel writer people, photographers, we need to get our travel writing community to stop, go off the beaten path a bit. I know we have all these press trips
You're
and all that
right.
stuff, but I think Margot's book shows us it's not just going to like Johnny, isn't this true? Going to the same big fancy club kind of deal. We need to go off the beaten path as on the tourism community. And I'm not saying I'm to always talk about responsible tourism. Responsible tourism is about understanding history and culture and nature, be kind to all, having a light footprint. And we need to start looking at these places so maybe we can save them. You know what I mean? Because if no one's looking at them, and I think this is the beauty of Margot's book and the beauty of your book, Lisa, as well, you know, The 100 Things to Do in Coastal Mississippi Before You Die. I think we need to start as people who travel, get over the big fancy things, you know? It's like staying at bed and breakfast instead of the big fancy thing resort. You know what I mean? We need to change our perception of how we travel and how we do things and maybe look at these places.
I love that you, I mean, this, it's like you're reading. I'm actually in New York City because we had a big writers conference this week. And I met with a, you know, whole horde of destinations who, you know, they want you to, but the funny, I mean, the very, not funny, but the very, very interesting part that I find, especially during this conversation, is there's always seems to be a buzzword each year when I come to these things. And sustainability is it this year. There's actually three that I picked up on with everybody. Sustainability, basically, and the words literally were spoken probably 100 times yesterday, off the beaten path. And the other thing that is the buzzword is indigenous cultures. So those are like the three things that, that at this conference people were, but I think you're right. I think music is a subtitle, so to speak. And that's one of the reasons that I met with certain destinations is because of my interest in music, not just blues, all music. And I love music history. So I have a number of places that that's kind of what I'm going to delve into. So it's just really interesting that that's what I spent the week listening to. And here we are talking about it.
See, I know everything. No, I'm kidding. I'm just kidding. But it's the truth. But that's the truth, because it's like, I want to go before the graveyard, right? I want to go before that. And Margot, what you've done, I mean, you even had musicians stay in your house, right? Am I right? You had a room dedicated in your house.
Yeah, Luther Guitar Jr. Johnson. I met Luther in the 90s. And it turned out that he was living in New Hampshire at the time, and his doctors were outside the Boston area. So I practiced law in New Hampshire. So I wrote a story for Blues Wire before I wrote it for Living Blues. And I said to him, what's going on with your health? Would you like me to go to your doctor's appointments? And that led to a lifelong friendship, and he would stay at my home. You know, I would bring him to and from appointments, and then, you know, there were times when he stayed with me for days, weeks, and even months. Yep. Mm.
Johnny, that's any awesome. More questions on your side?
No, I want to thank Margot for doing this book and doing it so well.
I know. Thank you. And one other comment for the audience. So, and to respond to what Lisa Evans was just saying, or Lisa Smith too, I mean, you know, so one of the pleasures of Mississippi, you know, that I experienced, and, you know, again, things are changing, but that there are still small festivals where you can get up and personal, you know, up close to hearing the music. There, in some instances at the smaller festivals, where you'll have a chance to talk to the musicians, meet people from the community. You know, you find the little restaurants, and that's been one of the wonderful experiences in Mississippi of doing exactly that. I mean, it was in my first time I was in Greenville at the Bait Shop, which is, you know, where they had music, and I didn't know anybody, and behind me, Eddie Cusick and his wife were seated, and Eddie, I can't remember if it was Eddie or his wife, came up to me and invited me to sit with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was the start of a friendship, you know, again, until through the time of Eddie's death, where I would constantly visit them, or, you know, wherever he was performing when I was down, I would go there. It's So this is a very it's a wonderful thing, a wonderful experience that is there for people to also they can also experience the same thing that I did.
I really appreciate what you say about going to like places and restaurants and things and mom and pop places, especially in the South. Go to the mom and pop places. You know, travelers, seriously, just stop it. Like it's like, you know, the mom and pop places are where the real things and the food is good, right, Johnny? You know it is, right? You know
Yeah,
the
the
food
small
is good.
places are always the best.
Yeah. And it's
And you
like,
can talk to people. I mean, it's an opportunity to talk to people from the, from the area.
It's just like
And it's important to support the people who are running these their own luncheonette or restaurants. Absolutely.
when we got to this country in 97, back when you started your blues journey, Margo, we moved to Florida from South Africa, and I went to some bar out in it was after a hurricane, 97, 98. And it was out in Destin Beach, I think we were out in the Panama, like the panhandle of Florida. And James Peterson was playing. Lucky Peterson's his son, right? And he tried to get me up on stage to sing because I was singing along with it. I was loving everything. And I chickened out. And I'm like, I didn't know who I'd met. I didn't know anything, you know. And then later I was like, you know, my boss at the time, because I was teaching people how to play the organ and musical in organs instruments. And my boss at the time gave me an album. He's like, "You got to listen to James Peterson and Lucky Peterson." And I was like, "Holy crap, this stuff is good!" And that's who I met. And I didn't know; I had no clue. And you know, we Sam and Dave, the one that's alive, we saw in Florida, like our first week into this country, we saw him play. I was like, "What is going on?" You know, it just go to the smaller places, the mom and pop places. That if that's where the blues is happening, the local bands, go see the local bands and support them. I mean, it's whether it's blues or not, it is about that. And for small mom and pop businesses to host musicians is a big deal, and it's costly for everybody. So be part of it. Be part of it with, the world of, I feel like we're in an MTV culture again in a weird way. You know what I mean, Johnny? Don't you feel like that sometimes? And we need to get down and get into the places in the small towns because you'll find music that you wouldn't, it just would blow your mind. So everyone, Margo Cooper, keep up with her at margocooper.com. It's Margo Cooper.com. Johnny Mastro is johnnymastro.com. Lisa Evans is writerlisa.com. All the links are in the show notes. I want to thank each of you for joining us on the show today. It's been extra special. I know we went over time, but how could we not? Before you go, in closing, each person, we're going to put on a concert, but we're going to have a dinner first, right?
All
We're going to have a dinner
right.
first. Who do you want to
Food and
invite to
music.
dinner? Who are you inviting for dinner, right? With a concert, we're all going to just have a jam session, which is always the best, right? A blues jam. So, Margo, who do you want to invite for dinner and for the blues jam? Alive or past?
Mean, oh my guys, all the people who are in the heavens now, I want a call out to them. Luther, come on down. Uther, come on down. Sam, come on down. Willie
Damn.
Big Eye Smith, come on down. Fuzz, come on down. I mean, I want them all. I sometimes do. I'm at home and I go, come on, Luther, come on. I want to hear
And Luther is such a good name, man. So everyone, Deep Inside the Blues, Photographs and Interviews. That's the book. And she's calling everybody down. So we're gonna that's a big we're gonna have a big ass party, man. That's not just a
There you
that's
go.
a that's a party. That is gonna have some wiggy butt and squat dancing. That's coming. That's gonna have to happen. Johnny, who are you inviting to the party? I can almost guess.
Well, this is so hard, but I don't know. I have to say somebody like Charlie Patton, probably, just because there's so little known about him. And Hound Dog Taylor would be he's my favorite. So
No, no Muddy
that would be
Waters.
something.
I
Well,
have
Muddy
Muddy
too,
Waters.
but The thing is, we're kind of
Aww.
spoiled now with Muddy. There's video and there's a lot of records and things, but with like
The
Charlie
Rolling
Patton,
Stones like mess it up, right?
right? But with some of the older, there's hardly any. In Elmore James too, there's no video of him. You know, it would be really,
Oh.
really something to see him. You know,
Ah.
so those are
Yeah.
mine, I guess.
I want to bring Terry Evans in. I don't know if you guys knew him, but he used to play with Ry Cooder, and he passed away right as I was in a conversation of getting an interview, and I'm pissed because I delayed. I delayed. Don't delay. Do not delay. Right, Margo? Do not delay the interview. Do
No,
it when.
yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it would be it was heartbreaking to me the number of I wanted to cover as many people as I could, and sometimes I would think to myself, this is chasing the blues. Paul Wyn Jones, I said to him, okay, when I then my next trip, I'm going to interview you. He died before I could do the interview. It's very, especially if you're not living in the place where you're trying to interview people, it's very hard. But yeah, there's no time to be lost. And everybody has a story to share. So yeah, don't start yesterday.
Go on, Lisa. Who do you who are you bringing to dinner in the jam? I mean, party.
Oh goodness. Well, I'm gonna make you happy and go with Bobby Rush and Buddy Guy.
Buddy Guy's got to
Let's
be in there,
see.
dude. Come on,
He
sweet
has
tea.
to. And then,
I'm
of
gonna
course,
need to explain that now.
if we're bringing people back to the living, I have to say, and Lisa, you and I've had this discussion, I want Elvis back when he started with the gospel and the soul and how he started. And then there's a local guy that I really like. Well, local, not local, local, but his name is Lucius Spiller, and he's a blues guy. I've seen him several times, and he's just very good. I enjoy him.
And we got to have Johnny there because Johnny, like Johnny
Well, of
Mastro and the
course.
Mama's
Well,
Boys, listen.
he's bringing his own. He's bringing his crew.
The best song ever, Indrid Cold. I played this song, like, seriously, when I have to drive through stuff, I'm watching my language. Like, you put that song on, you can go through any, and if you're going to go through Wisconsin, you never know. At night, you never know what's going to get you.
It's
Just
like a
saying,
novelty song.
oh God, I love that song. Are you kidding me? I'm serious. But everybody, JohnnyMastro.com, writerLisa.com, and again, the book is Deep Inside the Blues, Photographs and Interviews by Margo Cooper. Go get it now. Thank you all for joining us. And man, let's all have a party.
All right.
All right. Thanks,
All right.
everybody. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
Thank
Bye
you.
bye.
Bye.
Bye bye.
Thank you for listening to Big Blend Radio. Keep up with our shows at bigblendradio.com.